You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Good morning. I'm Cardinal Francis George. For the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago will be hosting discussions on issues, people, and associations that touch our lives. Welcome to the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and welcome to our program this morning. We're going to be talking about some public policy issues that affect the church and people of goodwill that are penning down Springfield in Illinois. And actually, today's show is probably a little bit more than just the issues that are pending in Springfield. We're talking about some issues out of Washington, D.C. as well. We have a really interesting show this morning, and I'd ask all listeners, if you can, to make sure that you tune in, especially at the bottom half of the hour. We're going to be talking with Deirdre McQuaid from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, and she's going to talk a little bit about the Healthcare Right of Conscience Act and some of the issues pending in Washington. And I really want listeners to stay tuned for some of the comments made on the House floor by the Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, and we'll talk about that. That'll be about 9:30 or so, and we're also going to talk this morning with Patrick Cascione, who's the Executive Director of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, and he's going to talk a little bit about you may have read in the papers that there's going to be a merger of two of the major healthcare hospital systems in the Chicagoland area. That is Prevena Healthcare System and Resurrection System. And they're going to be merging and forming one healthcare chain in the Chicagoland area, and actually probably through most of the state, at least the northern and central part of the state. We're talking about Patrick about that, and also about the governor's attempt to revoke property tax exemptions for some of the not-for-profit hospitals and why that's still an issue. But first, what we want to talk to this morning is this is a local issue that affects way too many people. And it is how we as a society come together and offer assistance for people who have some real serious addiction problems, mostly in the area of substance and alcohol abuse. And we're going to talk with Sarah Howe for the first part of the show here this morning, and then delve into those other topics. So we have three different topics this morning. So please feel free to call us and participate if you want to. I'll give the number now, and I'll give it throughout the show periodically. The number is 312-255-8408. That's 312-255-8408. And as we go into the, you may have been reading in the newspapers that the Illinois General Assembly will be meeting this week, beginning tomorrow, for a three-day period in something called the veto session. And that allows members of the General Assembly to act on the vetoes that the governor may or may not have issued during the summertime since we have last met back in, I think it was May or June. And then we'll be meeting again for another couple periods, a couple days in November. But the legislature can do just about anything at once in the veto session or not. So with that, let's jump on the first topic here, and let's see if Sarah's on the line with us. Sarah, are you with us?
I'm here.
Good morning, Sarah. How are you?
Good morning, Bob. I'm doing good.
Thanks for taking some time and joining us this morning to talk a little bit about some of the issues that your association has been facing. Sarah, I said in the intro, I think what we want to do this morning is to try to give people, listeners, the impression of what your organization has been struggling with over the last, gosh, it seems like the last couple of years or so, with some very significant funding cuts to programs that serve people who need assistance, either with a drug problem or an alcohol problem. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your association and what all has gone on in the last few years?
Sure, absolutely. And you're right. It seems like this has been going on for as long as we can remember. It seems like we've been fighting budget cuts,
right,
which has been such a challenge for our providers and the members of our association. Going back to FY09, actually, we've been having budget challenges, and if you actually take those 3 years from now till FY09, we've lost 47% of our non-Medicaid state funding for prevention and treatment services in the state of Illinois. That's critical when I mentioned that the non-Medicaid portion of that, because 80% of the clients that we serve in the state-funded substance abuse system don't have Medicaid coverage. They're not Medicaid eligible. So a majority of our clients are not able to receive Medicaid assistance, and half of our funding has been cut over the past 3 years.
So these are people probably like you and I and many of the listeners who either had a problem in their past and it's recurring, or maybe their health insurance doesn't cover these sort of things,
right,
and they're just not – they're not coping real well, and they need some help. And I think there's probably not a person listening to this program that doesn't either know somebody or has knows somebody who's had this problem in their lives. It seems like it's very prevalent in our society.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I would say, and others smarter than me and have done research have said, it's the number one public health problem addiction is in this country. When we deal with any other major issue, that, you know, you were just talking about being in Springfield and dealing mm-hmm. with the veto session.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, the other issues that you're going to see being
yeah.
dealt with will be impacted by addiction.
Housing problems, whatever, family problems, violence issues, et cetera.
Absolutely. I mean, you were even just talking, you know, I heard you talking about the hospitals,
mm-hmm.
Which obviously
mm-hmm.
wasn't the same issue, but, you know, talking about the hospitals and emergency departments. All you really need to do is ask any emergency room physician how often they see somebody with an alcohol
drugs,
or drug problem
alcohol,
coming
right.
through their emergency room.
Yeah, right.
It's
I was going to say.
Right.
Right. Go to a hospital on a Friday or Saturday night and look at the numbers of patients or people coming in as a result of an alcohol-related injury or what have you. Sarah, you are the—I should have said at the outset, you are the CEO of the Illinois Alcoholism and Drug Dependence Association. Give us the names, if you can, of some of the providers that people might recognize in
sure.
the Chicagoland area.
You're in the Chicago area, so
yes.
Haymarket Center, which is one of the largest treatment centers in the Chicago area, is one of our members, been a longtime member of our organization. Some of you may know TASC.
Yep.
They work with the criminal justice system. Healthcare Alternative Systems is another one of our providers. Peer Services, which is more on the north towards Evanston,
mm-hmm.
In that area as well. Southeast Alcoholism and Drug Abuse Council, or CDAC, if you're on the southeast side of Chicago. HRDI, which is Human Resources Development Institute. I could actually keep going. And keep
no,
going.
That's fine. That's good enough. I just want people to, sometimes when you talk about associations, they gloss over unless they can recognize a particular name. And so I think what you were saying, Sarah, is that so we have lost 47% of the providers who used to be out there since 2009?
The funding, we've lost 47% of our non-Medicaid state funding,
okay,
funding. Since FY09. What has happened is our providers have had to shut down different programs. For example, I was just mentioning
mm-hmm.
CDAC, and what they have had to shut down is their adolescent services, adolescent treatment services. They had, I believe, mm-hmm. an adolescent outpatient unit, and one of the only ones in the southeast side of Chicago. And you can't get adolescent services, which if any of your listeners have children, which I'm sure they do, you know that heroin has become a major problem
mm-hmm.
in the city and in the suburbs. Prescription drug abuse is skyrocketing among kids and adults, and underage drinking hasn't gone away either. So when you say we're not going to be able to serve adolescents, that's a major problem. And then, of course, we still have to deal with the adult problem, because if you don't deal with it, prevent it as a kid, or treat it as a kid, then you're going to continue to deal with this as an adult. So that's just one example. But across the state, I have, unfortunately,
way too
I have
many
a litany
examples,
of
right.
examples to give
yeah.
on what has happened.
And what everybody who's listening, I think at this point in time, has been educated enough to know that the state has some serious financial problems.
Mm-hmm.
Our revenues are not meeting the expenditures that are required of the state.
Right.
And I think we see a lot of tension towards pensions and
yep.
towards all these sort of things that the state has to provide for. And I just wonder what you the reaction you receive when you're telling legislators the plight of the providers and the cutbacks, and what do they say, or what do they give you any sense of there's a good news coming, or what is the reaction you usually get in your conversations about cuts?
You know, it's a double-edged sword, because they understand the situation that our providers are in. Many are sympathetic. I mean, it's obviously, right. It's in their districts. There isn't a legislator I talk to that doesn't see addiction in their district.
Sure.
So that's a good thing. They recognize and understand that. They don't like to see the system continually being cut back. But on the flip side, they say exactly what you said. We've got a really significant budget problem right now, and we don't want to continue to cut, but we're not sure what to do.
But they do anyway.
Right.
If there were ever a group, and I think Catholic Charities serves people who are vulnerable and poor and the least among us, but I also have mm-hmm. maintained for years that this association does as well. They're serving people who are, they're in trouble, and they need mm-hmm. our assistance, and what has happened to them over the last couple of years in the terms of the numbers of reductions is just not right. Sir, if you can just hold on, we're going to take a quick break. We'll
okay.
come back and resume this conversation for a couple minutes. We're talking with Sarah Howe, who is the CEO of the Illinois Association and Drug Dependence Association, and we're going to be right back, so don't go away.
Each night, thousands of families face homelessness in Chicago. Those families aren't just statistics. They're your neighbors, your friends. They could even be part of your own family.
I had lost my job, so I wasn't working, and I had run out of all my savings, so I ended up losing my apartment. And I went to stay with my sister, but she's got this small little itty-bitty condo, so we were all sleeping on the floor. So I started calling around for the housings and everything, and they told me to call Catholic Charities, and it just happened when I got through, Joanne answered the phone, and she goes, "You know, you got me just at the right time. We're actually doing interviews right now. You want to come in?" And she gave me the whole rundown of everything and how the program works and everything. She goes, "Is this something you can do?" And I looked at her and says, "You're offering me a roof over my head, something more than I've got right now. And I'm willing to do anything to keep that roof over my head."
Catholic Charities of Chicago is there to provide a helping hand to the homeless. Find out how to help us help the most needy. Visit CatholicCharities.net.
Real men answer the call to the priesthood. Is God calling you?
You know, I'm honored to be a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I think it's great.
There's a desire to want to give back and to help and to serve those who are especially in need.
I think there's a wonderful opportunity for us to bring good news to a world that's very much in need.
When I experience through my ministry someone being brought closer to the Lord, it's an exciting, thrilling moment.
If you feel God's call to a priestly vocation, contact us at 312-751-8298. Or visit our website at chicagopriest.com. John Paul II once said, "Do not be afraid. Open your heart to Christ. The deepest joy there is in life is the joy that comes from God. Jesus is the hope of the world. The people are calling. The world is calling. God is calling. Answer the call to the priesthood."
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois, and we're talking with Sarah Howe, who is the CEO of the Illinois Association and Drug Dependence Association. We're talking a little bit about the cuts that have been experienced recently in programs that serve those who are alcohol or drug dependent, and what hopefully now let's talk about a little bit what we can do about it. Sarah, is there anything going on the veto session, or would next session, next year, be the next chance to advocate for restoration of these cuts?
We are advocating during the veto session for a restoration through a supplemental appropriation. Certainly, we know, as we were talking about before the break, that the legislators are often asking the question of how can we do this? Where is the funding? And we would like to remind them every time we talk to them that if you don't put money into addiction prevention treatment, you're going to spend much more in many other areas. So you really can't afford not to restore these funds. So we are working with members of the General Assembly to get a supplemental appropriation during the next couple weeks. If we are not successful, we will certainly continue to push in January. But truly, the hope is that we can get this done in the next couple weeks. I mean, providers are at the point where they've already closed so many programs, and they're going to need to continue to do that. And with that comes layoffs,
job layoffs,
staff,
right.
Employment. Mm-hmm. I mean, this affects the family, it affects the client that is being served, mm-hmm. and it affects the staff. And the staff has already got, you know, a caseload that they're trying to manage. When you lay them off, then that's just going to actually cause a longer waiting list and exacerbate the problem.
And once again, I think we've said this in many ways, but just to reiterate, I think this is one of those areas where decreasing funding to the people who need these types of services just creates further problems in other aspects of what we deal with in society. You know, I can't even think of all the pathologies,
right.
But violence and homelessness and just people who need some help. And God willing, I mean, that's something that I wish nobody could face, is somebody who has got an alcohol or drug addiction problem. It is horrible what it does to families and individuals, and these people really need our help. And as compassionate Christians and Catholics, we need to reach out to those people who need our help most. Sarah, is there any, just in closing, any other way so people, if we want to get in touch with you or your website, any information you want to leave for listeners about your association and what they can do?
Absolutely. IADA.org, which is IADDA.org, the Illinois Alcoholism and Drug Dependence Association. They can get on our website. They can contact me directly. We do actually have our fact sheets up on the website. And I did want to mention to you, we do have two members that are part of Catholic Charities, the Addiction Counseling and Educational Services, or ACEs.
All right.
And
mm-hmm.
the Central States Institute of Addiction Programs are also members of the association as well, through Catholic Charities. So we do have a host of members across the state, and I think it's important to recognize, too, if you're, any of your listeners do find that they are in need of some assistance or they have a family member
Good
or
point.
A friend,
mm-hmm.
they can get on our website. We do have all of our members listed by region across the state, so they can just click on the area of the state they're looking for and give them a call. Certainly, having heard this discussion, I know that there may be that resistance. Why should I call? I might not get in. Make that phone call and find out what kind of help you can get, because you want to get in as soon as possible, because we can get to a point of recovery. This can be treated.
Absolutely, and it's a step in the right direction. And for people who are in doubt, go ahead and at least take that first step, and then
Absolutely.
You can deal with the other steps down the way, but you got to start somewhere. Sarah,
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning. It's very informative, and our best of luck to you and IADA in your quest to maintain some funding for the programs and the people that you serve. Great. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thanks. We'll take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll have on the line with us Patrick Cascione from the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, and he's going to be talking about the Resurrection Provena merger, as well as property tax issues that hospitals are facing. Don't go back. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
You are invited to an evening of remembrance and prayer on All Saints' Day for all victims of childhood sexual abuse and their families. A Mass of Remembrance will be held on Tuesday, November 1st at 6 p.m. at Holy Family Church, 1080 West Roosevelt Road in Chicago. The Mass will be followed by a candlelight procession and vigil service in the Healing Garden next to Holy Family Church. For more information, contact the Archdiocese of Chicago's Office of Assistance Ministry at 312-534-8256. That's 312-534-8256.
The Catholic New World has been your faith resource for well over a century. Archbishop Patrick Feehan recognized the need for a strong Catholic voice in 1892 and launched Chicago's first Catholic newspaper. Bishop Feehan named our Catholic newspaper using a theme from the Columbian Exposition, the New World that gave people hope for a brighter future. Today, the Catholic New World is better than ever. It's a rich and diverse resource for Chicagoland Catholics with stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Cardinal Francis George and our team of columnists offer compelling insights on spirituality, catechesis, and evangelization. Visit our website at catholicnewworld.com. View our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and while you're there, subscribe to the Catholic New World or call 312-534-7777. Our look has changed, but we are still your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois talking about a number of different public policy topics this morning. We were talking with Sarah Howe earlier about some cuts to those who serve people who are alcohol or drug addicted. And now we're going to talk a little bit in terms of healthcare, I suppose. We'll talk with Patrick Cascione, who's on the line with us from the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association. Patrick, are you with us?
Yes. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Good to talk to you. Patrick, we're talking before the break about, some of these social services, but let's talk about healthcare, acute care right now. I guess there's two things we want to talk about this morning. The first one is an announcement that was recent, last couple weeks or so, that two of the major healthcare systems in this area, Prevena and Resurrection, are merging. Tell us about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Bob. Resurrection Healthcare and Prevena Healthcare, two Chicago-based healthcare systems, are merging as of November 1st. They'll create a new organization. The name is still to be determined. But basically, it's going to create an organization that has $3 billion in revenues, probably 22,000 or so employees, 5,000 doctors, and it would compose of about 12 hospitals, plus you have long-term care, hospice care. So it's going to be a very large presence in the Chicagoland area. And it's just the reason that they're coming together is that the challenges to healthcare are changing rapidly. With the new healthcare reform that's going to take place over the next couple of years, and the decrease in funding from Medicare and Medicaid, hospitals have to become more efficient and better at providing services to their community, and that's what's driving Prevena and Resurrection coming together.
As a consumer of healthcare, then, if I'm in the Northern Illinois area or Central Illinois, I think where these two systems are located, will the hospital names change? Will everything be the same, or will those names be changing as well?
No, from a local perspective, my understanding is, and again, this just got approval from the state last week. But my understanding in talking with both of them is that at the local level, you won't see. The person in the community won't see any change, and they're going to keep the names the same. It's just at the system level, we'll do away with a lot of duplication with billing and insurance and things like that. But at the local level, you won't see any immediate change, although I think you're going to see some benefits over the long run because there'll be more capital, I think, available mm-hmm. to the local hospitals to increase their technology and their facilities and things like that.
It's interesting that years ago, when I came back here, I think it was like in 96, you had all these standalone little hospitals, and then you saw them merge into pockets of like two or three, and they merged into pockets of like 10 or 12, and now it looks like it's going to pockets of 20 to 30, and it just seems like that keeps expanding and expanding as we move on here.
Yeah, that's the evolution. As you said, it's been going on for a while, and it's just being accelerated now. You're seeing it in other areas, too, in Chicago with Trinity Health, a large system coming in to buy Loyola Medical Center.
And nothing's changed there. Loyola's still Loyola.
No, right.
It'll always be known as Loyola, right?
Right. Yeah. At the local level, it's a non-issue. As I said, it's a positive in the long run because there'll be more capital available to improve services. But on the face of it, no, there's no change.
So St. Joseph's on the north side will still be St. Joseph's, and St. Mary's and St. Elizabeth's will still be the same on the west side. And let's see, what are the Prevena names? I should know these better than I do. I'm drawing a blank. But those hospital names will still be the same by and large. So that's good. Patrick, let's talk a little bit while we have you on the air here for a little while longer before we get to Deirdre. We wanted to just at least make people aware that they knew that the Prevena Resurrection merger was going on. But as somebody who follows Catholic health care and the insurance matters and what's going on. We also still have this issue with, I think there was a story in the Chicago Tribune recently within the last couple weeks, and this has been a topic of conversation for years, about the state's desire to tax hospitals and put them on the rolls so they pay property taxes. And that's not going away, it looks like.
No. In fact, at the state level, you have them going after property tax. In the city, they're looking at taking away our tax benefit to water, access to water, and things like that. I mean, the state, the city, they're looking for revenue, just like your last guest. I mean, they're cutting back on services. They're missing the big picture. The money is in the pensions. They don't want to deal with it. So, you know, they're cutting back on reimbursement, and they're trying to look for new tax revenue. And it's a confused issue. First of all, there's no definition of what is charity care. You know, we had the Supreme Court make a decision with Praveen a couple years ago, and then just recently downstate with Meridian Village, which is a Lutheran facility. You know, there's no definition of what is charity care. Again, recently, though, Will County, their board came out in support of their not-for-profit hospitals because of the clinics that they do, the research that they do, the critical services that they provide to the community. Those things are going to go away if, in fact, a hospital has to pay, you know, $200,000, $300,000 in property tax. Well, it's got to come out of somewhere. So I think it's very short term. Now, the governor has put a moratorium on this. There's about 30 pending cases, and he put a moratorium on to see if the legislature can put some sort of rhyme or reason to this, some definition of what charity care is. But we'll see where that goes. But it's basically the state and local governments looking for additional revenue. And I think, again, it's very short-sighted.
It seems like the allegation that the hospitals are getting away with something for nothing is coming from some fairly active community organizations on the West Side. It's my impression that some of the leaders of those organizations see these very large structures, hospitals, large buildings, and they need health care because either they're uninsured or they're underinsured, and they have experiences with these hospitals that are not exactly satisfactory, and they're wondering, well, geez, it looks like a nice facility in there. I went in there, I was injured, and I didn't get care. What happened to me wasn't satisfactory. So what are they doing with all of that money that they are getting? I think that's the problem that the hospitals had. And like as you're saying, that there seems to be – they are saying, these community groups are saying, well, they should treat me for free because they're getting something for free, which is a property tax exemption. How do they answer that?
Well, there is a perception problem. You know, they see these big buildings. They think there's deep pockets. You know, most hospitals run at a 1 to 2% margin. It's not very big. They'd get more putting their money in the bank. But they are providing a community service. And by law, we have to serve everyone that comes through our door. So, you know, we do that. Now, at the same time, Medicare or Medicaid, let's just start with that, you know, they'll pay us 60 cents for every dollar we spend. So right off the bat, we lose 40 cents on every dollar of service that we provide. Medicare it's better, but, you know, it's the best payer out there, and it's not that great either. And then when people do come in, we have people that actually live in our hospitals long term because there's no place for them to go, and we eat that cost every day. You know, and part of the problem is we don't tell our story very well. We are doing in all the community outreach, the mammography vans, the health clinics, you know, the free prescription drugs that we provide, samples and things like that. It's and the education. We do a lot of education in the community, in our schools and things like that. We just don't tell our story very well. I think on the surface it looks like, oh, I went to the ER, I had to wait. I didn't think I got the best service, but you know, there's a bigger picture there. There's other people that are injured more than you are. We try to triage and get to those patients. It, it's It's difficult because, again, as you said, on the surface it looks one way, but it's very complicated, and we just need to do a better job of telling our story.
And the hospitals do a lot of good, as Patrick was pointing out. They're in the communities, they're doing the blood drives, and they're doing all of these philanthropic things and trying to promote community health, and that costs money to do those sort of things, and the state does not give them adequate respect for that effort, and that is something for nothing. I know that this is going to be a continuing issue in the state of Illinois and in other places as well. The whole question of taxation and the need for the government to look for more money. That's the music. Patrick, thanks for joining us. I think we covered those subjects adequately, and thanks for being with us this morning. And as we go to the break, don't go away. During the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. And I want to get the audience's reaction to a tape that we're going to be playing of Nancy Pelosi's comments on the House floor regarding legislation recently. So don't go away. Deirdre will be with us. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
Most interment arrangements at the 43 Archdiocese of Chicago cemeteries are made through a pre-need plan. Your thoughtful planning today is economically prudent and contributes to peace of mind for you and your loved ones. Catholic Cemeteries counselors are available at your convenience. For more information, call 708-449-6100. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
If you haven't read the Catholic New World lately, you're in for quite a surprise. It's bigger, bolder, and better than ever before.
The Catholic New World is a rich and diverse resource for Catholics throughout the Archdiocese of Chicago. It carries stories of faith, hope, and inspiration. Our most read column is by Cardinal Francis George, our shepherd, teacher, and leader.
Our columnists provide support in spirituality and evangelization, and you'll want to browse the Around the Archdiocese page, your gateway to Catholic activities.
No matter how busy you are, stay connected to your church by visiting CatholicNewWorld.com and sign up to follow us on Twitter.
Go to CatholicNewWorld.com to view our photo gallery, catch up on the latest news, and to subscribe. Or call 312-534-7777.
Subscribe now, and a portion of your fee will go to the Archdiocesan school of your choice. It's your faith resource. Subscribe now to the Catholic New World. You're listening to Catholic Talk Radio in Chicago and the suburbs on Relevant Radio 950 AM.
Every Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m., the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, the issues, and the faith that affect all our lives. Thanks for staying with us here on Relevant Radio 950 a.m. Now again, the Catholic Community of Faith.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan of the Catholic Conference of Illinois. We're talking about a couple different public policy topics. This morning we talked with Sarah Howe from the Illinois Association, Alcohol and Drug Dependence Association. And we were just talking with Patrick Cascione of the Illinois Catholic Healthcare Association, talking a little bit about the issue of property tax cuts for the hospitals, and exemptions for the hospitals, and the Prevena Resurrection merger. And now I want to take a bit of a switch and go to a national topic. That's something that's been in the news recently. And we're really lucky this morning to have with us on the line Deirdre McQuaid from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops and the Pro-Life Office. Deirdre, are you with us?
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
We are fine. We are fine. The Bears won, so people are in a good mood today.
I'm glad to hear it.
This is a big barometer of our moods out here. So, but next week, I think they're off next week. Deirdre, thanks for taking some time this morning to talk with us. There's a lot going on in Washington, and sometimes I think we don't adequately talk about these subjects because it just seems like there's so many bills that we could be talking about. But I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe two bills in particular. The one that was voted on just recently, I think, gosh, that was like last Thursday or Friday. It passed the House floor. I think that's H.R. 358, the Protect Life Act. I want to talk a little bit about that. And I also want to talk a little bit about what's going on with conscience rights and the prognostication, if you have any, about all the letters we've been writing back to Washington with the DHHS mandate. Let's talk a little bit about the H.R. 358 first. Maybe you could set up so that bill is out of the House now?
It is.
Okay.
Basically, the Protect Life Act corrects the serious flaws that remained in the health care reform law when it was passed in March of 2010. I'm sure as many of your listeners were involved in health care reform advocacy and calling in and sending in postcards. And basically, the health care reform law accomplished much good, but it did leave a lot of gaps in terms of both the protection of innocent human life in its preborn form.
Yeah.
There still is, unfortunately, funding for abortion in several ways in the healthcare reform law, and also inadequate conscience protections for those who provide healthcare services, as well as all of us who participate in healthcare by having our employers pay for our benefits.
Right.
So we'll get to that.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the funding for abortion thing. That was H.R. 358. And actually, it was just coincidentally, I was in Washington on a different subject, and I was there that night. And when I came back, I think we want to play a bit of this tape here for a second and maybe just get your reaction to it. This is something that the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said on the House floor. Mike, do we have it?
Under this bill, when the Republicans vote for this bill today, they will be voting to say that women can die on the floor and healthcare providers do not have to intervene if this bill is passed. It's just appalling. It falls right into there for the all. It's a health issue. This is a health issue.
I was in D.C. and I heard that the next day, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I mean, I know the minority leader said some pretty outlandish things, but you know, so is this one. And I how do you guys deal with this back in D.C.? I mean, and that unfortunately is not that's not the only time you're going to hear some comments like that from certain members of the House.
It's absolutely maddening, really is to it maddening, insulting, and just downright untrue.
Right.
Would that our laws actually prohibited abortion under all circumstances, because abortion is never necessary even to save a woman's life. If a woman's life is at risk, you don't want to endanger her further by performing a surgical procedure that would possibly put her into shock, etc. I mean, this notion that abortion is necessary to save women's lives is just false from the get-go. But you'll see that even in that quotation that you just played for us, she went between lives and health. Now, this gets played off of each other quite a bit. They say that for women, reasons of women's health, women need abortion. And we would also say, of course, no woman needs an abortion. She may feel like she needs one. She may feel desperate. She may need a lot of other support. But abortion is never, as such, the answer.
And the thing about this bill also is that it had nothing to do with prohibiting abortions. It had to do with federal funding of it, correct?
That's right. That's right. But they equate any, they being abortion advocates, this is the language of Emily's List, the pro-abortion PAC, the NARAL, which used to be, of course, originally it was the for the repeal of abortion laws, the National Association for the Repeal of Abortion Laws before Roe v. Wade. Then it became the National Abortion Rights Action League, and now they just call themselves NARAL Pro-Life America. But this is their language to say that somehow women will suffer if they don't have expanded access to abortion. This is about expanding access to abortion, and those who passed the House bill said, no, we will not expand access to federally funded abortion. It already expanded under the health care law, and so this is to pull it back to where we were before. And again, would that we could go even further, but right now we're in a game of defense where we're trying to maintain imperfect but as good as possible laws under the circumstances. So to say that women will die because of this is really just, it's a sign to me that actually the other side is running
desperation, scared. Exactly. That's what I was thinking too. Because when you get involved with that kind of rhetoric, it's over the top. And I think even people who are in the middle look at that, and I think by and large they're getting it, that's a little, at some level people recognize that's just not true. It's just not true. And so I don't know if they help their cause by engaging in that kind of rhetoric. We're talking with Deirdre McQuaid, who's with the United States Conference of Catholic Bishop. She's in the pro-life office. If you want to join the conversation, it's 312-255-8408. Deirdre, one quick question before we take a break. And why, if President Obama issued an executive order at the end of the health care reform debate stating that there should be no federal funding of abortion, why is H.R. 358 necessary?
The long and short of it is, unfortunately, that executive order is not effective in closing all these gaps that we needed to. It was a step in the right direction, but it was a small step, and there's still gaps. There are still ways in which our federal funds, our taxpayer monies, are going to be used to subsidize abortion. But now we also have looming around the corner because of the HHS decision, paying for abortions, other people's abortions, with our own private money.
Right. We're going to talk about that after the break.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break now, and we'll come back with Deirdre, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, and also about the Department of Health and Human Services regulations that are pending. This is Bob Gilligan talking with Deirdre McQuaid. If you wish to join us, we're talking about the health care right of conscience and some of the activities in Washington. The number is 312-255-8408. We'll be right back.
This year, on November 26th and 27th, the Catholic Church all over the United States will begin celebrating the Mass using the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. In much of the prayers, responses, and acclamations, this English translation will no doubt sound a bit different from what we're currently used to in the Mass. The question is, are you ready for these new words? The Office for Divine Worship invites you to a two-hour session of information and reflection, Praying the New Missal Texts, a workshop for all Catholics. There are several sessions scheduled through early November. For dates, times, and locations of the remaining workshops, go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153. Don't miss this opportunity for exploring the English translation of the third edition of the Roman Missal. Go to www.odw.org or call 312-534-5153.
Choosing an elementary school for your child is one of the biggest decisions you will ever make to shape your child's future. So why pick a Catholic school?
I want my kids to learn more than the three R's. They need a faith-based education so they make good decisions.
I want my son and daughter to go to college. At Catholic schools, attendance and graduation rates are nearly 100%. And when these kids graduate, they go to college.
My teacher is so cool. She knows who I am. She helps me when I have trouble figuring things out.
My son is in the number. The student-teacher ratio is 18 to 1, and Catholic school teachers are really dedicated.
I want my daughter to feel welcome, to be safe.
The test scores are well above the national average. Look out, college. Here they come.
Go to www.archchicago.org and click on Schools to learn more about the great benefits of a Catholic education. Invest in your child's future. Make your child a winner for life.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bob Gilligan talking with Deirdre McQuaid of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops Pro-Life Office. We're talking about H.R. 358 before the break. Deirdre, so that bill passed the House the other day, and it's waiting to be taken up by the Senate, I take it?
Yes, it's waiting to be taken up by the Senate. This is a major hurdle, mm-hmm. so I would encourage your listeners to contact your senators and say this is absolutely essential. You promised us that abortion wouldn't be funded in this, or you know, whatever angle it takes to say that it's absolutely essential that vast majority of Americans, even people who consider themselves pro-choice, don't think that their taxpayer money should be subsidizing abortions. They could be available under private health plans, separate riders that people can pay for themselves. But even some of our pro-choice neighbors think that this would be a necessary measure to take.
Yeah, I try to point out in presentations is this is where we are in the debate. This is not rolling back Roe v. Wade. This is not making abortion illegal. This is about using your public money, your taxpayer money, to fund something, whether you may or may not agree with it. And I think that helps a little bit. But I just think, you know, that quote we played from the minority leader from Nancy Pelosi indicates where they are. I mean, they're more than trying to protect Roe v. Wade. They're trying to promote these things, and that's unfortunate.
And they're out of touch with your ordinary so-called pro-choice American. They
absolutely
don't know where they stand.
Right, absolutely. So on your website, do you have materials up on – we can do this as well. I don't know if we have anything on 358 right now. We will put them up there. So for us, the quest would be one is really a reach, which is Senator Dick Durbin. But Mark Kirk from Illinois is the other U.S. senator, and albeit he has not been exactly a pro-life champion, I would encourage listeners to contact Senator Kirk's office, because he's the type of person that perhaps we could move at some point in time on H.R. 358 if they were ever to take it up.
That's right. And in the Senate, it has been introduced as Senate Bill 877, and the bishops have a current action alert on that at the NCHLA website. And if you connect to that on your own, then Illinoisans can
great
go there and act, yes.
Senate Bill 877 is the one that we'll promote, and I'll check on that when I get back to the office and see where we are with that. This bill just passed like last week or so we have some time on this,
yes.
But time to do it is soon. Deirdre, before we go, we have about another 12 minutes or so. Let's talk a little bit about the conscience issue. We had the Catholic Conference of Illinois, we had board meetings last Friday and Thursday, and wow, this is really on the front burner of the bishop's radar screen. Or if that's even a phrase, but they are very interested in this issue. Why don't you start? So the mandate that came out, and why don't you just tee it up for listeners and where we are?
Sure, as briefly as possible. One part of unfinished business in the healthcare reform law was to define the preventive services for women specifically, and we were concerned about this from the start,
mm-hmm.
because services for women, right, we talked about this during healthcare reform debate and also after its passage. But what we feared would be the case has come to pass, that in addition to very necessary health services for women, screenings, vaccinations, certain kind of well-woman visits, you know, lots of things that are good for women,
mm-hmm.
and by extension for their children and families, the bishops don't take any position with regard to that. The question here is,
what is a preventative service?
Right, what is a preventive service?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Institute of Medicine made a recommendation that the Department of Health and Human Services took wholesale, which was that all drugs and devices that are approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, as contraceptives, will be covered with no copay or cost sharing by every single insurance plan, save a very few in the entire country. So all drugs and devices that are defined by FDA as contraceptives, and also surgical sterilization.
Mm-hmm.
No copay, no cost sharing. That means that, this doesn't mean that it's free. Someone's got to pay those doctors and pharmacists, right? And for the drugs, for the anesthesia, for all of this. That cost will get passed on to everybody who participates in that private plan. So the employers are paying into it. The participants in the plan are paying into it. This will affect almost every single American in the United States.
Including those that work for religious organizations that object to this.
That's right. I mean, the religious exemption that they provided is written so incredibly narrowly that would only apply to church institutions that hire and serve, in our case, mostly Catholics, and meet other strict criteria that would exclude most Catholic schools, hospitals, social service agencies, and it's been pointed out that not even Jesus himself would qualify for that exception because he actually healed and cared for those who weren't in his particular religious affiliation.
Yep. This is, it's, I think the thing that, as I'm listening to you, and I've been part of this issue for the last couple weeks, it's interesting to me that I understand why the bishops are so concerned about this, because we have a lot of ministries, we have a lot of people that work for the church, and we do this in the name of healing the sick, or dealing, curing the poor, dealing with the poor, or educating the young. And we employ people to do that. And when we do that, we have to abide by the secular law. And we do, by and large. But there's certain aspects of our faith that compel us to do this are also those same things that prevent us from offering morally objectionable services or paying for them. And it's kind of a hard thing to articulate, but I fully understand why the bishops are so concerned about this.
They're very concerned about it, and the bishops are not alone as a Catholic organization. Just a week and a half ago, 20 organizations came together and signed their names. These are presidents, heads of organizations. President of University of Notre Dame was one of them. Catholic Charities USA, Catholic Daughters. I'm just looking at a list here and picking the names off the list. Catholic Relief Services, Association of Latino Leaders, Knights of Columbus, etc. All these groups came together. This is not a list of groups you would necessarily see in a list typically, because they're doing all different kinds good work. But they all share this common concern, which is you cannot coerce us to cover so-called services. I have a hard time calling it a service because it's not actually serving the human person or serving the family. But these procedures, drugs, surgeries that, in some cases, even are abortifacient. The drug Ella, which we've fought before, is approved as an emergency contraceptive, but can actually disrupt an established pregnancy, much like the abortion drug RU-46 does. So good news was that thousands upon thousands of people, upwards of 54,000 folks, responded to our call to weigh in on HHS's coercive rule, so we hope and pray that they'll pay attention to that. I think that was just from the bishop's campaign alone. Many others also weighed in.
Did you say 54,000?
54,000 distinct email addresses sent over that many messages. We think that wives and husbands are sharing email addresses and sending them on. But a conservative number is over 54,000 messages were sent through our campaign. And now we have this ad where the 20 Catholic groups are coming together, and that list is growing. That came together very quickly because they all recognize the urgency here. So, but regardless of how HHS reacts, all they asked for was the definition, reaction to the definition of a religious organization such that there would be an exemption. We're objecting to much more than the religious exemption.
Right.
We want other groups, other people of goodwill who aren't necessarily associated with a religious organization. Let's say a Catholic works for a law firm or a secular organization of some sort, all of those employers will have to cover this, and there will be no option to opt out of abortion coverage, contraception coverage. This is coercive across the board. This isn't just a matter for hospitals or Catholic organizations, but for everybody who has a concern about subsidizing drugs, devices, and surgeries that are against life.
I think the interesting part about this as well is I think the Bishops' Conference has done a very good job of trying to get the word out about what's going on. And it's very difficult to articulate what's going on because this is something that's not – look, it's hard enough getting lay Catholics to understand who their U.S. senator is, who their U.S. congressman is, and who their state reps and state people are. And I think we're at that point in our history where I think the people who are watching these things understand understand, okay, I call, you know, we were talking about H.R. 358 earlier. I call Senator Kirk. I call Congressman so-and-so. I think we get that. I think one of the things that we're really struggling with here is this is very esoteric inside baseball sort of things for you and I, we understand it, but this is a rule that's coming out under the Obama administration. And I'm not sure if people really get that, and I'm not sure if they really have to get that, but they need to understand who's driving this and what's going on here. And I think as we go on here, I don't know how we get that word out more. I think a lot of the things that we do are just keep saying it over and over and over again, and people will get it. But it's been very interesting to me see the kind of the gloss in people's eyes going, huh? They don't quite get where this is coming from. Didn't we do this? You get that.
No, I understand. It is a challenge. And there are two aspects of conscience rights. There's the medical professionals, that their conscience rights be protected, that they not be forced to participate in the provision of services, et cetera, that they can refuse to be involved in morally objectionable procedures and drugs. And then this is conscience protection kind of from the other side, which is the institutional conscience protection and the individuals who are in them, that that we not be coerced into the use of our monies for objectionable procedures. So, I mean, abortion, I don't want one cent of my money going to a private health care plan, and it may be, if this rule actually is fully implemented and we don't have a legal fix to it, which I'd like to bring up here, if this isn't legislatively fixed by the passage of the Respect for Rights of Conscience Act, which is the action item, here.
H.R. 1179 or something?
1179,
right.
That's right. And it's also been introduced in the Senate as S-1467. The Respect for Rights of Conscience Act would make sure that conscience protections are applied evenly across the board. And really, it's a basic civil right. This isn't about Catholics wanting to impose our morality on other people. You hear that a lot, gets thrown around. This is about basically state imposing its morality on us, and that's where the separation of church and state is most relevant.
Yep. We're going through that here in Illinois with our battle to maintain Catholic charities and foster care with the civil unions law, and it's a similar. Mm-hmm. I think what we're going to hear is a recurring theme over the next couple of years, and the Bishops' Conference understands this about the right of conscience and that sort of thing. Let's talk a little bit about what is your prognostication for all of these 54,000 people who have sent and contacted HHS? Do you have any sense of when there'll be a decision, or if there'll be a decision, or what will happen?
Well, according to the HHS comment period, they need to take every single one of those messages into consideration, or they have to actually read it. So at first we thought they might be giving a very quick response, but then we thought it'd be hard for them to prove that they actually took into consideration these,
if they do it quickly,
total of hundreds of thousands of messages, right. But we hope for the best, but plan for the worst.
Okay.
And chances are, especially since they only asked for this narrow question on the definition of a religious exemption, that our concerns will not be heeded, and all the more reason to pass
1179.
The Respect for Rights of Conscience Act, which will basically, what 1179 does is ensure that those who participate in the healthcare system retain the right to provide, purchase, or enroll in health coverage that's consistent with their religious beliefs and moral convictions.
And that bill has not been heard yet, correct?
That's right.
H.R. 1179 is something that I know we wrote to our congressional delegation and asked them to co-sponsor that bill, and a number of them did. I have to say, I think we did fairly well in Illinois. But nothing yet. Is there any sense, will that be discussed at all before the year's out, or is that something that we're going to be waiting your election year politics?
Well, we're hopeful that it'll get a hearing and maybe even a vote in the House. Jeff Fortenberry from Nebraska and Dan Boren, Democrat from Oklahoma, are the co-sponsors of the House bill. Senator Roy Blunt in Missouri sponsored it in the Senate. Again, things are moving more slowly in the Senate. I'm cautiously hopeful that the House will take this up. So we're very much in the stage. It's not as exciting to write or call in when a vote isn't imminent, but now really is an urgent time for people to call and say, please get behind this.
1179.
That's right. It cannot be voted on if it's not considered, if it doesn't get enough groundswell support. And, you know, for every phone call, for every letter written, our elected officials know that that represents hundreds, if not thousands, of other people. So
we're going to put that up on our website again today. I think it's up there, but I'll make sure it's up there, 1179. And if people want any information from USCCB, where should they contact? How should they find
that? Go to our main website, usccb.org/conscience.
Great. Deirdre, thanks so much for joining us this morning. We got a lot of information out there in a short period of time. And thanks to Patrick and Sarah Howell for joining us as well. This is Bob Gilligan. Join us next month when we talk about other different public policy topics facing the people of the state of Illinois. Thanks, everybody, and have a nice day.
This is Cardinal Francis George. Thank you for being with us this past hour on Relevant Radio 950 AM. Join us every day, Monday through Friday, as the Archdiocese of Chicago presents the Catholic Community of Faith. Have a wonderful day, and God bless you.